according to Luke 16th chapter. Glory to you, Lord. Then Jesus said to the disciples, there was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him, so that this man was squandering his property. So he summoned him and said to him, what is this that I hear about you? Give me an accounting of your management, because you cannot be my manager any longer. Then the manager said to himself, what will I do now that my master is taking the position away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do so that when I am dismissed as a manager, people may welcome me into their homes. So summoning his master's debtors one by one, he asked the first, how much do you owe my master? He answered, 100 jars of olive oil. And he said to him, take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 50. Then he asked another, how much do you owe? He replied, 100 containers of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and make it 80. And his master commended the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly, for the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourself by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into their eternal home. Whoever is faithful in very little is faithful also in much, and whoever is dishonest in very little is dishonest also in much. If then you have not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust you with the true riches? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to another, who will give you what is your own? No slave can serve two masters. For the slave will either hate one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord. You may be seated. Grace, peace, and mercy are yours from the triune God. Amen. I have to start by, I was gone on Friday, came home yesterday, and Addison was watching the dogs for me, and I came home, and I'm like, it's been a busy week, I still have to work on my sermon. And so she was talking about time in the future where I'm going to be gone, and the text is so difficult. And I'm like, yeah, it's difficult, read the one for tomorrow. She read it, I said, read it out loud. So she reads it out loud and she goes, okay. I guess I have nothing to complain about from my text because I don't know what you're going to say. And I said, thank you very much, Addison. That helps zero. So, as I read this, I couldn't help but get this particular preacher out of my mind. It's a guy, his name is Brian McLaren, and I have heard him preach a handful of times in person, and I've heard him preach online quite a few times. And he has a lot to say. I don't know if he's always talked about money when I have heard him, but he has a lot to say when it comes to money. In fact, there was one time that I saw him that he had us at this conference to take out a bill that we had in our pockets. And most of us had at least a dollar in our pocket. And he asked us to flip it over to the back side. And he wanted us to just hold it and pay attention to it for a moment and to think about how it made us feel. And as we held it in our hands, he said, isn't it interesting that we write in God we trust on the piece of paper which becomes the God we trust? Our text today is from Luke 16, and many times when you are preparing a sermon, you'll kind of see what happened before. before and after, so at least you know the context to which it's written. If you go back to chapter 15, you will find Jesus telling three very familiar parables. The parable of the sheep, the parable of the coin, and the parable of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the parable of the lost son, which we sometimes call the prodigal son. All three of those are given in response to the Pharisees, the religious leaders, because they had an issue with Jesus hanging out with sinners. You know, Jesus hanging out with those people. So we begin chapter 16, and Jesus is actually continuing the conversation. This is a whole new thing, but he's still talking about the sinners that we hang out with, or that Jesus, I should say, hangs out with. So Jesus just has given three parables, lost sheep, lost coin, lost son, and then we get two additional parables. And the first one starts with, there was a rich man, and the other one starts, there was a rich man. We quickly find out the problem with the Pharisees is that they didn't value people. You know, they're sinners, they're worthless, they're not worth the time and energy. And they didn't value people because they improperly valued money. They loved money, and probably way too much. So, if we were just to tell those three stories, we could walk away from them and kind of feel good about ourselves. That, you know, we could be these people in there. But then these two rich men stories, well, it can start to take us off the hook. Or it can put us back on the hook, I guess. Because we start to ignore with those our money issues, and these it's thrown right back at us. I once had my dad ask a question. My father tended to be a little blunt and not quite understand, but he loved to question me about Bible stuff, and he said to me one day, you know, when I go to church, all I hear is money, 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 money. I mean, why don't you ever talk about other things that Jesus says? Why don't you talk about Jesus talking about homosexuality? And I said, that's a great idea. Jesus doesn't talk about it. And the truth is, the number one thing Jesus talks about is money. So it's hard to get away from Jesus, Dad. Well, he wasn't really thrilled about that. But the truth is, and this is going to be really strange to think about, the people back in the first century Palestine, they got so worked up about money, which is why Jesus is talking about it all the time. Something we can't even fathom, right? Glad it happened back then. So, what is Jesus getting at? Well, we'll do a little first century economics to try and get at what Jesus is trying to say with this. So first, it starts with Rome. Rome centers themselves on the occupation of Palestine, something hard to imagine today, Palestine being occupied. But they occupy it and control it, and everything they say goes. The Romans would come into the territory that they now control, and they would do two things. They would exploit the natural resources, give me, give me, give me, and they would exploit the workers and the work that they do. They would do this with I don't know how to explain it, but this is this really, it's this first, actually it goes back to before first century concept. It's called taxation. Has anybody ever heard of taxes? Yeah, okay, so you might have heard of that. So this is gonna come off kind of strange, kind of a foreign concept, but these rich people, it ended up that they really weren't paying much in taxes at all. But the poor people, and the middle class, but especially the poor people, found themselves paying a whole lot more than what would be their share. I mean, really, it's a strange concept, isn't it? Also, you need to know that the rich people lived in the southern part, in a state called Judea, where there was the capital city and the religious center, as is, was Jerusalem. The poor people, they were farmers, they lived in the north. They lived in Galilee. And so the Romans, who are occupying this whole land, would need a lot of wine, they would need wheat, they would need olive oil from the farmland in Galilee. Now you would think that it would be a great way for farmers to get rich, right? There's demand, and so the farmers are going to get rich. Farmers, does that work today? How's the price of milk going? Are you getting rich off of milk? Well, it was like that in the first century, too. What would happen is the government would tax those small farmers, and they couldn't afford the taxes. So then the rich people from the south, who were kind of previously part of, well, they were part of their culture, but they didn't gain wealth and move to the good place. So they were trusted. They would come in to these farmers and say, hey, I've got a great deal for you. How about we will pay your taxes? Great idea, right? But in exchange, we're just going to ask for the deed for the property. It's really no big deal. I mean, you're still going to get to work the land. You're still going to get to live on the land. And so we'll pay your taxes. Great deal. Well, when you don't have much of a choice, you don't have much of a choice. In return, for us paying your taxes, we're just going to ask you to give us a percentage of your wheat and your wine and your olive oil. And then those rich guys from the south, they will take that and they will sell it for Roman bread at a huge markup. They sell it for wine for the banquets, and I'm sure they get a pretty penny. And the olive oil, they've got to have a lot for dipping bread, Caesar salad. I don't know. They need olive oil. So the guys in the south, and it's hard to believe, are able to get richer and richer. And the poor people continue to have more pressure squeezed on them. It's hard to believe, but that's what happened back then. And now let's add one more detail. When those rich guys from the south wanted a portion of the crops from those, poor farmers from those people up north, they didn't want to make the trip all the way up north. And honestly, it was probably a good idea because it wouldn't have been safe, because the farmers knew they were being exploited. And they didn't really like those rich men very well. And so the rich men would send like mid-level managers. They called them stewards or managers. And they were sent to go and say, okay, pay up, please. And so, let's see, I'm going to have you give us 30 barrels of wine and And 20 bunches of wheat. Let's go with that. And so that's the backdrop of this parable. There's a rich man. So you kind of know about the rich man. There's this manager that he has, and you kind of understand where he is. And the rich man is mad at the manager because the manager is squandering his holdings. Or in other words, he's not getting a big enough return for his investment. The manager is not squeezing enough out of those farmers. The rich man wants more and more and more. So the rich man is just going to fire the manager and get another one who will do the job. Now I imagine that dialogue that happens there. The rich man, you know, it's just the lazy farmers. If they would just push a little harder and do a little more work, they wouldn't have a problem. But there they are, sitting around drinking coffee all day. So the rich man fires the manager and tells him to get the books ready because, well, they need to be turned in before he leaves the job. At this moment, the manager who probably is like many of us, kind of that middle class person who's just trying to get by, trying to make his boss happy, he gets caught in the middle. He's probably thinking, I've worked for this guy for years, and now he's just throwing me out just because he doesn't have enough money, and I have no security. What am I supposed to do? I'm not strong enough to do manual labor, and I can't beg for handouts. And he realizes that he actually is expendable. With the rich people above him, he decides he's going to switch sides. I will arrange things so that at least I'm friends with the poor. So he goes up north and he asks the farmer, how much olive oil do you owe? 100 barrels? You know what? Just make it 80, we'll be fine. Or how much wine? You, a couple metric ton? How about we do 1.2 metric ton? That'll be okay. He does this to get a return for the rich guy, but he also does it in a way that gives the poor a break. This story isn't about the one who is terrible and evil, because that's easy to figure out. It's about someone who saw through the injustice of the economic system and decided to switch sides and work for the poor, but that isn't really what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, you better learn that money isn't the ultimate measure of all things. It would be better for you to use your money in service of relationships, instead of using relationships in service to money. And Jesus goes on to say, you cannot serve two masters. He uses a strong language that the only reason I feel comfortable in saying is because it's not my words, it's Jesus' words. When he says, you will either hate God and love money, or love God and hate money. Which makes me go back to Brian McLaren and those dollar bills we hold, held in our hands. I mean, let's be honest, we need money. The electric bill ain't gonna pay itself. But if you start taking seriously what Jesus said, you almost start to feel like every time you take your hand out of your wallet, you should wash your hands. Because we can be made dirty by the way that money causes us to improperly value other things. We have a culture that looks at the environment around us, the oceans, the mountains, the rivers, the soil, and we look at what we can get out of it. even if it's just the short-term profits, that will usually go to the rich man at the top of the pyramid. Because honestly, money brainwashes us. It has blinded us. And if you are sitting there wanting to scream, Esther, you have absolutely no clue what you're talking about. Money has no power over me. Well, okay. But I know for myself, money has pushed the ugly hooks into me. And I don't think I'm the only one who says that. I think the kingdom of God that Jesus proclaims has an economic system of God and invites us to lose faith in the system that says the rich will do whatever they want and just let the little crumbs fall down on the rest of us. It's okay. No. God's economic system says everybody matters. So put God at the top. Love God. And everything else will have this new value. You will soon see things in a very different way, a new system. You will see things differently. You will be set free in a way you never expected. You will be liberated. If you will love God first and put your money in its proper place. Thanks be to God.